Chapter 10. Christian love which should subsist between us. I may feel grieved and hurt at the circumstance. Still I may not rush to the conclusion that Mr. Chuzzlewit is wholly without a justification in all his coldnesses. Heaven forbid. Besides, how, Mr. Tigg, apostrophe continued Pecksniff even more gravely and impressively than he had spoken yet, how could Mr. Chuzzlewit be prevented from having these peculiar and most extraordinary confidences of which you speak, the existence of which I must admit, and which I cannot but deplore for his sake? Consider, my good sir apostrophe and here Mr. Pecksniff eyed him wistfully, how very much at random you are talking. Apostrophe, why, as to that, apostrophe rejoined Tigg, it certainly is a difficult question. Apostrophe, undoubtedly it is a difficult question, apostrophe Mr. Pecksniff answered. As he spoke he drew himself aloft, and seemed to grow more mindful, suddenly, of the moral gulf between himself and the creature he addressed. Undoubtedly it is a very difficult question. And I am far from feeling sure that it is a question anyone is authorized to discuss. Good evening to you. Apostrophe, you don't know that the Spittletoes are here, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Tigg. What do you mean, sir? What Spittletoes? Apostrophe, asked Pecksniff, stopping abruptly on his way to the door. Mr. and Mrs. Spottletoe, apostrophe said Chevy Slime Esquire, speaking aloud for the first time, and speaking very sulkily, shambling with his legs the while. Spottletoe married my father's brother's child, didn't he? And Mrs. Spottletoe is Chuzzlewit's own niece, isn't she? She was his favorite once. You may well ask what Spittletoes. Apostrophe, now upon my sacred word. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff, looking upwards. This is dreadful. The rapacity of these people is absolutely frightful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's not only the Spittletoes either, Tigg, apostrophe, said Slime, looking at that gentleman and speaking at Mr. Pecksniff. Anthony Chuzzlewit and his son have got wind of it, and have come down this afternoon. I saw him not 5 minutes ago, when I was waiting round the corner. Apostrophe, oh, mammon, mammon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff, smiting his forehead. So there, apostrophe, said Slime, regardless of the interruption, are his brother and another nephew for you, already. Apostrophe, this is the whole thing, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Tigg. This is the point and purpose at which I was gradually arriving when my friend Slime here, with 6 words, hit it full. Mr. Pecksniff, now that your cousin and Chiv's uncle has turned up, some steps must be taken to prevent his disappearing again, and, if possible, to counteract the influence which is exercised over him now by this designing favorite. Everybody who is interested feels it, sir. The whole family is pouring down to this place. The time has come when individual jealousies and interests must be forgotten for a time, sir, and union must be made against the common enemy. When the common enemy is routed, you will all set up for yourselves again. Every lady and gentleman who has a part in the game will go in on their own account and bowl away, to the best of their ability, at the testator's wicket, and nobody will be in a worse position than before. Think of it. Don't commit yourself now. You'll find us at the Half Moon and 7 Stars in this village, at any time, and open to any reasonable proposition. Hem. Chiv, my dear fellow, go out and see what sort of a night it is. Apostrophe, Mr. Slime lost no time in disappearing, and it is to be presumed in going round the corner. Mr. Tigg, planting his legs as wide apart as he could be reasonably expected by the most sanguine man to keep them, shook his head at Mr. Pecksniff and smiled. We must not be too hard, apostrophe he said, upon the little eccentricities of our friend Slime. You saw him whisper me? Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff had seen him. You heard my answer, I think? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff had heard it. 5 shillings, eh? " said Mr. Tigg, thoughtfully. "Ah! What an extraordinary fellow! Very moderate too." Mr. Pecksniff made no answer. "5 shillings. " pursued Mr. Tigg, musing, "and to be punctually repaid next week, that's the best of it. You heard that?" Mr. Pecksniff had not heard that. "No. You surprise me," cried Tigg. "That's the cream of the thing, sir. I never knew that man fail to redeem a promise in my life. You're not in want of change, are you?" " said Mr. Pecksniff, "thank you. Not at all." " returned Mr. Tigg. "If you had been, I'd have got it for you." With that he began to whistle, but a dozen seconds had not elapsed when he stopped short, and looking earnestly at Mr. Pecksniff, said, "Perhaps you'd rather not lend Slime 5 shillings? "I would much rather not," Mr. Pecksniff rejoined. "Egad!" cried Tigg, gravely nodding his head, as if some ground of objection occurred to him at that moment for the first time. "It's very possible you may be right. Would you entertain the same sort of objection to lending me 5 shillings now?" "Yes, I couldn't do it, indeed," said Mr. Pecksniff. "Not even half a crown, perhaps?" urged Mr. Tigg. "Not even half a crown." "Why, then we come," said Mr. Tigg, "to the ridiculously small amount of 18 pence. "Ha! Ha!" "And that," said Mr. Pecksniff, "would be equally objectionable." On receipt of this assurance, Mr. Tigg shook him heartily by both hands, protesting with much earnestness that he was one of the most consistent and remarkable men he had ever met, and that he desired the honor of his better acquaintance. He moreover observed that there were many little characteristics about his friend Slime, of which he could by no means, as a man of strict honor, approve, but that he was prepared to forgive him all these slight drawbacks, and much more, in consideration of the great pleasure he himself had that day enjoyed in his social intercourse with Mr. Pecksniff, which had given him a far higher and more enduring delight than the successful negotiation of any small loan on the part of his friend could possibly have imparted. With which remarks he would beg leave, he said, to wish Mr. Pecksniff a very good evening, and so he took himself off, as little abashed by his recent failure as any gentleman would desire to be. The meditations of Mr. Pecksniff, that evening at the bar of the Dragon, and that night in his own house, were very serious and grave indeed, the more especially as the intelligence he had received from Messrs. Tigg and Slime touching the arrival of other members of the family were fully confirmed on more particular inquiry. For the Spadlettos had actually gone straight to the Dragon, where they were at that moment housed and mounting guard, and where their appearance had occasioned such a vast sensation that Mrs. Lupin, scenting their errand, before they had been under her roof half an hour, carried the news herself with all possible secrecy straight to Mr. Pecksniff's house. Indeed, it was her great caution in doing so which occasioned her to miss that gentleman, who entered at the front door of the Dragon just as she emerged from the back one. Moreover, Mr. Anthony Chuzzlewit and his son Jonas were economically quartered at the Half Moon and Seven Stars, which was an obscure alehouse, and by the very next coach there came posting to the scene of action so many other affectionate members of the family who quarreled with each other, inside and out, all the way down, to the utter distraction of the coachman, that in less than 24 hours the scanty tavern accommodation was at a premium, and all the private lodgings in the place, amounting to full 4 beds and sofa, rose cent per cent in the market. In a word, things came to that pass, that nearly the whole family sat down before the Blue Dragon, and formally invested it, and Martin Chuzzlewit was in a state of siege. But he resisted bravely, Refusing to receive all letters, messages, and parcels, obstinately declining to treat with anybody, and holding out no hope or promise of capitulation. Meantime, the family forces were perpetually encountering each other in diverse parts of the neighborhood. And, as no one branch of the Chuzzlewit tree had ever been known to agree with another within the memory of man, there was such a skirmishing, and flouting, and snapping off of heads, in the metaphorical sense of that expression, such a bandying of words and calling of names, such an upturning of noses and wrinkling of brows, such a formal interment of good feelings, and violent resurrection of ancient grievances, as had never been known in those quiet parts since the earliest record of their civilized existence. At length, in utter despair and hopelessness, some few of the belligerents began to speak to each other in only moderate terms of mutual aggravation, and nearly all addressed themselves with a show of tolerable decency to Mr. Pecksniff, in recognition of his high character and influential position. Thus, by little and little, they made common cause of Martin Chuzzlewit's obduracy, until it was agreed, if such a word can be used in connection with the Chuzzlewits, that there should be a general council and conference held at Mr. Pecksniff's house upon a certain day at noon, which all members of the family who had brought themselves within reach of the summons were forthwith bidden and invited, solemnly, to attend. If ever Mr. Pecksniff wore an apostolic look, he wore it on this memorable day. If ever his unruffled smile proclaimed the words, "I am a messenger of peace," that was its mission now. If ever man combined within himself all the mild qualities of the lamb with a considerable touch of the dove, and not a dash of the crocodile, or the least possible suggestion of the very mildest seasoning of the serpent, that man was he. And, oh, the two Miss Pecksniffs! Oh, the serene expression on the face of charity, which seemed to say, "I know that all my family have injured me beyond the possibility of reparation, but I forgive them, for it is my duty so to do." And, oh, the gay simplicity of mercy, so charming, innocent, and infant-like, that if she had gone out walking by herself, and it had been a little earlier in the season, the robin redbreasts might have covered her with leaves against her will, believing her to be one of the sweet children in the wood, come out of it, and issuing forth once more to look for blackberries in the young freshness of her heart. What words can paint the Pecksniffs in that trying hour? Oh, none, for words have naughty company among them, and the Pecksniffs were all goodness. But when the company arrived, that was the time when Mr. Pecksniff, rising from his seat at the table's head, with a daughter on either hand, received his guests in the best parlor, and motioned them to chairs, with eyes so overflowing and countenance so damp with gracious perspiration, that he may be said to have been in a kind of moist meekness. And the company, the jealous, stony-hearted, distrustful company, who were all shut up in themselves, and had no faith in anybody, and wouldn't believe anything, and would no more allow themselves to be softened, or lulled asleep by the Pecksniffs, than if they had been so many hedgehogs or porcupines. First, there was Mr. Spottletoe, who was so bald, and had such big whiskers, that he seemed to have stopped his hair, by the sudden application of some powerful remedy, in the very act of falling off his head, and to have fastened it irrevocably on his face. Then there was Mrs. Spottletoe, who being much too slim for her years, and of a poetical constitution, was accustomed to inform her more intimate friends that the said whiskers were the lodestar of her existence, and who could now, by reason of her strong affection for her uncle Chuzzlewit, and the shock it gave her to be suspected of testamentary designs upon him, do nothing but cry except moan. Then there were Anthony Chuzzlewit, and his son Jonas, the face of the old man so sharpened by the wariness and cunning of his life, that it seemed to cut him a passage through the crowded room, as he etched away behind the remotest chairs, While the son had so well profited by the precept and example of the father, that he looked a year or two the elder of the twain, as they stood winking their red eyes, side by side, and whispering to each other softly. Then there was the widow of a deceased brother of Mr. Martin Chuzzlewit, who being almost supernaturally disagreeable, and having a dreary face and a bony figure and a masculine voice, was, in right of these qualities, what is commonly called a strong-minded woman, and who, if she could, would have established her claim to the title, and have shown herself, mentally speaking, a perfect Samson, by shutting up her brother-in-law in a private madhouse, until he proved his complete sanity, by loving her very much. Beside her sat her spinster daughters, three in number, and of gentlemanly deportment, who had so mortified themselves with tight stays, that their tempers were reduced to something less than their waists, and sharp lacing was expressed in their very noses. Then there was a young gentleman, grandnephew of Mr. Martin Chuzzlewit, very dark and very hairy, and apparently born for no particular purpose, but to save looking glasses the trouble of reflecting more than just the first idea and sketchy notion of a face, which had never been carried out. Then there was a solitary female cousin who was remarkable for nothing but being very deaf, and living by herself, and always having the toothache. Then there was George Chuzzlewit, a gay bachelor cousin, who claimed to be young, but had been younger, and was inclined to corpulency, and rather overfed himself, to that extent, indeed, that his eyes were strained in their sockets, as if with constant surprise, and he had such an obvious disposition to pimples, that the bright spots on his cravat, the rich pattern on his waistcoat, and even his glittering trinkets, seemed to have broken out upon him, and not to have come into existence comfortably. Last of all there were present Mr. Chevy Slime and his friend Tig. And it is worthy of remark, that although each person present disliked the other, mainly because he or she did belong to the family, they one and all concurred in hating Mr. Tig because he didn't. Such was the pleasant little family circle now assembled in Mr. Pecksniff's best parlor, agreeably prepared to fall foul of Mr. Pecksniff, or anybody else who might venture to say anything whatever upon any subject. This, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, rising, and looking round upon them with folded hands, does me good. It does my daughters good. We thank you for assembling here. We are grateful to you with our whole hearts. It is a blessed distinction that you have conferred upon us, and believe me, it is impossible to conceive how he smiled here. We shall not easily forget it. Apostrophe, I am sorry to interrupt you, Pecksniff, apostrophe remarked Mr. Spottletoe, with his whiskers, in a very portentous state, but you are assuming too much to yourself, sir. Who do you imagine, has it in contemplation, to confer a distinction upon you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a general murmur echoed this inquiry, and applauded it. If you are about to pursue the course with which you have begun, sir, apostrophe pursued Mr. Spottletoe in a great heat, and giving a violent rap on the table with his knuckles, the sooner you desist, and this assembly separates, the better. I am no stranger, sir, to your preposterous desire to be regarded as the head of this family, but I can tell you, sir, apostrophe, oh yes, indeed. He tell. He. What? He was the head, was he? From the strong-minded woman downwards everybody fell, that instant, upon Mr. Spottletoe, who after vainly attempting to be heard in silence was fain to sit down again, folding his arms and shaking his head most wrathfully, and giving Mrs. Spottletoe to understand in dumb show that that scoundrel Pecksniff might go on for the present, but... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.